It's time. Let's start. Welcome to this new edition of Virtual Machines. Last time we kind of looked at the LET construct, that is the introduction of local definitions. And so this the translation was quite natural. So if we introduce a sequence of variables, then essentially we evaluate the corresponding right-hand sides, and after evaluation of these right-hand sides, the code generation will produce code which in the end, when executed, leaves another reference on top of the stack. So evaluating the sequence of expressions will therefore leave a sequence of references on top of the stack, and we adapted the address environment accordingly so that we could access these values on top of the stack as through the corresponding local variables. So that was the idea of the LET. And then now when the main expression of the LET has been evaluated, then the local variables go out of scope. So they have to be squeezed out of the stack again, and the value of the main expression, which is now on top of the stack, kind of has to be moved down into the stack, which means that the space formerly occupied by the local variables, these are these k fields, they have to be removed. And that is simply done by copying the value on top of the stack k steps down into the stack and subtracting the number k from the stack pointer. That's it. And then the local variables are gone. So that was for the local variables. And so that was kind of a simple exercise. And now the more difficult things still are ahead of us. Namely, the key issue there is, what do we do with functions? So clearly, if we, in a functional language, we should be able to deal with function definitions and with function applications. So function applications, they should, in principle, so at least this is our intention, be translated in a similar way as function applications in C. The only thing which perhaps might be different is function definitions. Because function definitions are, in some sense, anonymous. In that sense, or they create a function definition when you execute it. It's not so that it's just sitting somewhere as a piece of code, but there's also something happening at runtime, because a function definition will create a functional value, which then is an object in the heap, which can be moved around. Yeah, so therefore, for function definition, we have to do a little bit more. In particular, we have to create a functional object. Now, clearly, this functional object itself must contain a reference to the code, which then later is executed when the function itself is called. So we have to distinguish here two things, which are not, in this sense, not present in imperative languages. We have to distinguish between the creation of the functional object and the code to be executed when the function is called. Yeah? And clearly, the functional object will contain a reference to the code. And in this sense, if you think, compare it with C, so there you do not have to create a functional object, you only have the reference to the code. So therefore, it's just a point, it's a number, nothing is to be done. But here it's not just an address, but an address which must be wrapped into the object. Okay? So now what do we have to do What else besides the address of the code do we have to wrap into the object representing the function? So the first thing is, there could be globals. The code might refer to variables which are not local to the function, and so therefore it is required to wrap the current values at the declaration, at the definition point of the function, the current values of these global variables into a global vector, which we then put together with the code into the object. Yeah? And then clearly, recall that a functional object does not only have this global vector, but it has and the pointer to the code, it has also a pointer to the argument vector. So when I create a new functional object, there are no arguments, so therefore I have to create an empty argument vector, and these three things then are put together into the functional object. Yeah? Okay, so that means the code for a function is like, can be seen like follows. Now you see a lot of instructions and you wonder, is this difficult, is this easy? But the first thing is we perhaps should divide this code into kind of blocks. So the first block which we realize is this one here. What is this? So if you have a functional value here like this fun thing with an expression, so we look at this function and then try to determine the set of free variables in this functional expression. Yeah, so assume that this is set 0 to set g minus 1. Then we will wrap the current values of these variables into a vector. So this means we use this macro getvar. What is getvar? So for global, it's just a push glob. And for local, it's a push lock, depending on what kind of variable this set 0, set 1, set 2, and so on is. Yeah. So these set 0, set 1, these are variables occurring in this expression. Therefore, we can look them up. They are already existing. So we may look them up in the current address environment. Yeah. And that we do. And according in this is this row. And accordingly, we find whether they are local or global outside. Not inside the expression, but so far. And then, therefore, we can generate the corresponding instruction to push their value on top of the stack. And please mark also that for the first one, we use the stack, as an extra argument, we always have to provide to this macro the current stack distance. And so the current stack distance. Here this is this extra argument, and the stack distance currently is SD. But as soon as we have pushed the first value of a variable, then the stack distance increases. Yeah, so therefore the stack distance ever increases. And this is important because by that the addressing of the local variables among the set Z0, Z1, and so on changes. But please once again remark that these are all the Z0 to ZG minus 1 are global to the function, but they are perhaps local to the whole expression. So therefore they could be kind of sitting on the stack currently. But once now we put them onto the stack and then we wrap them into the vector. We have no possibility so far to do that, but therefore we create a new instruction. This is this make vector. This takes the values which are sitting on the stack and put them into the vector and leave a reference to it on the stack. Perhaps let us look. Here is this instruction. Yeah. So we have pushed the value to the globals, the references to the globals on top of the stack, and then we make a vector out of it. And please remark that the first global that the first global is pushed on top of the stack first. So therefore, the lowest in the stack will be put first into the vector. And the last to be put onto the stack will be put in the last location of the vector. Yeah? So that is for the global vector. Okay? Now we have understood this initial part of the sequence. And then now we have this vector. Then what else do we need in order to create the functional object? We need the empty thing, okay. And we need to wrap into this functional object the address of the code. The address of the code, well, this is this A. And so therefore now, giving this A, we have all in external data in order to create the object, and therefore we invent, we have, so far we have no possibility to create such a functional object, we create a new instruction, this is this make funval instruction, which does all the work. And we later see how to implement it. But for code generation, it's just this make funval, and this gets this extra argument A. And now starting at A, we will have the code for the function, which is executed when the function is called. So this is in some sense, this A corresponds to the function pointer. Yeah. So this is the function pointer. But now when the functional object is created, at that point in execution times, at execution time, we are not immediately going to evaluate because we just move around this functional object. We just create the object. Therefore, we have to not to run into this code, but jump across it and proceed afterwards. Yeah? So that at this position V, on top of the stack, we expect the functional object for later use, for, I don't know, putting it into a list of functions, doing whatever we like. But the code is which is wrapped into the functional value is not executed at that green time, but at the red time, which might be later. Okay? So that is this one. Now we may finally have a brief look at the code, at the real code for the function. And we see here that the number of arguments, which is this k, is here is part of this code in this t arg and return. So the test arg is an extra instruction kind of opening the code, and as the name says, it tests whether there are k arguments available. And we will discuss this instruction later. And then this return k is also an instruction which kind of, in the end, we know there is something like that we have to return a value. It is a function. This is the same as in imperative languages. So at that time, we currently do not know what this instruction will do. It finishes the execution and hands over control to the caller. So that we will discuss then, and this instruction also needs to know how much arguments the function has consumed. Because in some sense, this is the number of arguments which kind of have to be squeezed out of the stack. Yeah, so therefore there's this return k thing. Okay, so therefore we do not yet understand this test arg k and the return k instruction, but for code generation purposes, we can generate them. So we will discuss the implementation of these instructions later. And now what do we see in between these two instructions? In some sense, we find that what we expect. Namely, when the function is called, what has to be done? Well, the value to be returned by the function must be computed. Now, how is it computed? It is computed by evaluating the expression representing the body of the function. This is this E. Now this is this therefore the code V is of E must be computed. The value of the body must be computed when the function is called. When I want to have the value of the function call, then I have to compute, evaluate the body of the function. Okay, so that we believe immediately. The only thing, there are two things. When we want to generate code V, we must know what is the current stack distance. That is this value. And what is the current address environment? That is this value. Now for the stack distance. So there is this convention we already have agreed upon. That is, we said that when the parameters are all pushed on top of the stack, and then the topmost parameter, this is the pointer, the stack pointer, which this is the place in the stack where the stack pointer points to when the function is called. And from there we used our addressing scheme said that the last parameter has stack distance 0, and then stack has address relative address 0, and the next one minus 1, and so on. So in that sense, the stack distance must be 0. Okay? This is when we enter the function. Stack distance is 0. Now, what is this row prime? Well, what kind of variables do we have in the expression E? In the expression E, we have the global, those which are completely global in the function, and those which are the parameters. So the parameters will get addressed, get the relative addresses minus I, so the ith parameter has relative address minus I and is local. And the globals, well, we have wrapped them into this vector G, and they are, well, they are global, and therefore have relative addresses 0, 1, and so on. Yeah, and are global. So this is this row prime, which we can immediately, by looking at the expression E, or at this functional expression, we can determine this row prime. And this row prime will be used for generating code for the body of the expression. Okay? Could you follow in that? Okay. So here's this make vector instruction that we have already seen. Now this make funval instruction. So that is the next one, which I kind of promised to provide and have not yet shown to you. So when make funval is called, on top of the stack, we have, so we, this is at a point in of the point in the execution of the at execution time, where the vector for the globals has already been computed. So this is sitting on top of the stack. Now what we do not have yet is the vector for the empty vector for the arguments. And what we do not yet have is, and additionally we have to create this F object. So therefore, so in the end, we want to have this F object where this fabulous address A is stored as code pointer, and this vector here is the global vector, and this argument vector is simply receives the empty vector. Yeah? And that's it. And these, the corresponding sequence, which is this one, I have written down here. Okay? Is there a question? Could you follow for that? So that was not so difficult. The only thing, once we agree upon that here, we only create the F object. And we only, it is just for convenience that we also at that, the same place, have produced the code for executing the function, but that is not yet executed, it is jumped over. Yeah. So now we are able, for example, to create code for such an expression. Yeah. So what is it? So we want to create code for this thing, for a particular address environment. So assume this is this one. A is, this is the global variable in F, in the expression F. This A is global. Yeah. B is local. A is global. In the functional expression. Yeah. You see that? So B is, so A is, and assume that it has just relative address 1. So why not? Yeah. So it's just an exercise. And assume that the stack distance also is just 1. And now what do we have to do? So that is here at this place we have the 1. Now we have to create, if we want to create a code which produces the functional object. So this code for producing the functional object first has to produce a global vector. So the global vector is a bit stupid because it's not a vector, it's just a single thing, but still we, for convenience, we wrap it into a vector. Here, once again, silently speaking aside, if an expression has only a single global variable, we could simplify the code by not doing this vector thing, but using just the placing the reference directly there. So that we could do, which would kind of simplify the code and also a little bit the memory layout. So because we would save the extra indirection through the vector with one element, but that's kind of just an optimization. Okay, so now let us see here for the here we can stupidly create this vector. So stupidly creating this vector means that we have to push a reference to A. So now what is it? A is local, has relative distance 1, stack distance is 1, so therefore push log 1 minus 1 is 0. That's just always this quite mechanical evaluation which we have to do. So now nothing more has to be pushed. So therefore, now we make the vector, which is here. And you see that after the push log, the stack distance has increased by 1. Then this A is put into the vector, and the reference to the vector is put onto the stack, so therefore the stack distance does not change. So therefore the stack distance is still 2 when we create the vector, the functional value. And now how complicated that ever might be, we just do it by producing, we just spill out the instruction, make funval A. And now starting at A, we expect the code for evaluating what has to be executed when the function is called. We proceed ourselves with B and continue here. Yeah, and the rest, which I may mark blue, this part is just, now what is that? That is the code which is executed when this function is called. Now, and we said, so maybe I just make, sorry. Now we concentrate on the code which is executed when the function is called. So that the opening, we said, was this test arc 1 and return 1. Okay, and in between, we have the code V with stack distance 0 and this modified address environment row prime. And we may now write down how this row prime looks like. Row prime. So what does it has to speak about? It has to speak about the A. So what can we say now about the A? What relative address? Local or global? Now A is global, because in the body it is global. And it has relative address, which one? 0. And the B? What do we know about that? This is a local. Which relative address? 0, because we start the parameters to count from 0. Yeah. If there were another one, then this would have relative address minus 1. But here it has just 0. Okay, so that we know, now This is all we need to know. Now we can do the code V and for this thing. So the first thing is, so it's now simple, we have to do A plus 1. So A plus 1 is, so we have, sorry. So we have to do the A. So this A is global, so therefore push glob 0. Okay, so we understand that. Okay, since it, this, if we assume that we have, we do code V in a call by need environment, then we have, we cannot be sure that the global is, has already been evaluated, so we have to evaluate it. When we are in OCaml, so in Haskell we have to do the eval, in OCaml we don't need the eval. So that's kind of, we can leave it out. So that is the value. Now we have the reference to the value of A. Now, but we need, since we want to add it, so therefore we have to get hold of the real value, so therefore this get basic thing. Yeah, and always the stack distance still is 1, because we have one more value on top of the stack. Now, we have to, what do we do with a B? So, the stack distance is 1, we subtract the relative address, so 1 minus 0, and this is 1. So therefore, push log 1 pushes the B. And then, again, we evaluate, get the value of it, get the basic value of it, and then we can do the add, and then we have the sum. But now the sum is still sitting on the stack. We have to make a basic value out of it to get it into the heap and return the reference. So now everything is clear. Okay? So you understand the code. And it's very schematic application of the thing. And now, but so that was kind of the code when the function is called. Once again, sorry that I repeat myself so often, but I think this is a very important thing if you want to understand that code. Creating the functional object is just these three instructions, and then we jump across this the code and proceed with B. Now then comes, that was the creation of a functional object. Now comes the function application, and that is the interesting thing. Yeah? Because what do we have now? In principle, we want to do it in the same way as we did it in C. The only thing is now, if we evaluate the function, the result will not just a code address, but a functional object. And a functional object does not only contain the code address, but also this argument vector and the global vector. And these are required, because without them we will not be able to evaluate the function properly. Yeah? So, now, but we kind of already have an intuition what we have to do. So if, now just look at this, function application. So our, what will we have to do? Okay, so in the same sense, in somehow in the same way as in imperative languages, we need something like a stack frame. So here with our design choice was a little bit different as in the imperative world. In the imperative world, we first produced the parameters and then the organizational cells. Here we do it a little bit differently. We first allocate the organizational cells and then push the parameters. I wonder whether it would be possible also otherwise. So it is more convenient in this way. Another thing which we have to do is kind of to evaluate the parameters. Now the question is in which order do we evaluate them? But I may recall that one should be deepest in the stack and this one should be most closest to the stack pointer. So therefore this should be evaluated last. And then in the end we will have to evaluate the expression E prime, leaving us a reference to the functional object on top of the stack. So this is this one. And we have to, a little bit, we have to be careful in that sense that we now, there's a certain distinction whether we are in a call by value or in a call by need environment, because in a call by value environment, we will evaluate the parameters right away, but in a call by need evaluation, we will kind of construct closures and not evaluate the expressions. So we will have to produce code there which constructs closures and not which evaluates the expressions. Okay, and then once, but what in both cases, however, we will have to do, the important thing is to evaluate the expression E prime and then apply the function which is there. Okay, so let us see what we have, how that looks for in a call by need environment. So here is the expression. What kind of code do we need? So here, stack the address environment is the row. The stack distance is here the second parameter. Now, what do we have to do? Again, so we note, we first allocate the organizational cells and by that create the stack frame. So this corresponds, this is done by this instruction. And in the end, we have to do something like a call. Now this is, looks a little bit differently from what we had in the C machine, so therefore a new instruction apply. And also please mark that this mark instruction, which we had in C, this was had no parameters. Yeah, I think it had no parameters because it was only and here we do it a little bit more elaborate or contrived, so we kind of have another parameter here for this mark instruction, namely the continuation address. So the first address after where the execution continues when the call is finished. Yeah. So that was the PC old. That was which kind of in C, the call instruction kind of pushed the current PC on top of the stack and by that stored this A. And this we do here explicitly already in this earlier place, not by saving this continuation address not by the call, but we already save it when we construct the stack frame right away in the beginning. Yeah, so but that's, since it's a static address, we can do that. Okay, so that's a certain difference. And the apply, we have to see how really this works. But now for the moment, it's just an instruction. Yeah, once again, so we have now this kind of two things which we have understood. And now what happens in between? Well, the first thing is we need kind of to evaluate the arguments. So this happens here. And then afterwards, we have to evaluate the function, which happens here. Now, let us take a little bit closer look how we evaluate the arguments. So let us start with the first argument to be evaluated. This is the rightmost. So therefore, this EM minus 1. This is the rightmost one. And now, what is the key question which we have to ask ourselves is, what is the address environment for that? Well, this is the address environment of the whole expression. So this, therefore, we have a row here. Now the second question which we have to ask is, what is the stack distance when this code is evaluated? Now the stack distance before the code for the whole application was SD. Now in between we have executed this instruction mark. Now this mark instruction will allocate, will save the organizational cells. Now how many organizational cells do we have? We have the old PC, we have the old frame pointer, and we have the old global pointer. These are three. So therefore, we have stack distance plus 3 here. Okay. Now for the next parameter, so there one is, the stack distance has increased by one because we have pushed one element, so therefore we have a four here. And successively the stack distance increases because more and more references are put on top of the stack. So in the end here, when we go for the last one, we have the stack distance has increased by m plus 2. Why? Because at that point we have m minus 1 arguments already sitting there. M minus 1 plus 3 is m plus 2. Okay, so therefore m plus 2. And then with m plus 3, we eventually will have to generate the code for the function. This is this e prime. And notice, once again, that this e prime is evaluated last. Before that, we evaluate the arguments. Okay, and then one more thing. Since we are in this call by need environment, therefore we construct closures only. Also, we do not yet know how to do it. But we will use closures for the arguments and only, but for the function, this we know, this we need by all means. If you want to have the value of the expression, of the application, then we have to evaluate the function by all means. So therefore, code V in by all means for the E prime. Okay, so I hope now that I have explained everything here for that thing. Is there a question there? Perhaps one more thing. So once again, that is the line which is stated here, that if we do not care about delaying evaluations, we will generate code which evaluates the arguments right away. This is the call by value semantics, like in OCaml. And then this V here everywhere, this V there in these places, this is then all by value and not by closure. Yeah? So once again, so we can let us see an example. So we immediately want to have an example in order to see how the code looks like, or in order to see that it's not so complicated. So F applied to 42. If we can't generate code for that, we will be doomed anyway. So what is it there? There's a variable, this F. And we need an address environment for it and a stack distance. So, and for convenience, now we can, so it's not completely, it's not arbitrary that I kind of use this address environment and this stack distance, because this is a code snippet from a larger piece of code, and so it's convenient to use the corresponding things if from the full code generation. So that means here, okay, so that assuming that F is a local with relative address 2 and the stack distance is 2, and we do call by value, because then we do not have to think about this closure thing. And what does our code generation say? Okay, we start with a mark, and we end with the apply, and the mark itself contains a reference to the first address after the application. Yeah? And now what happens in between? Well, we have to evaluate the 42, and then we have to evaluate the F, and that's it. Now evaluating the 42 means we have to create a basic value in the heap for 42. So therefore, this means we load the constant 42 and make a basic. So that's it. That is code V for 42. Okay? Now comes now we have to think about the F. And for that, so since F is a local, the stack distance at this, before this instruction, is crucial. Now what is the stack distance there? So we are happy now that we have taken track. I have already on the slide. kept track of the stack distances. So if the stack distance before was 2, the mark instruction will increase by 5, the load instruction will increase to 6, make basic will not change, push lock, so that therefore we have 6. Yeah? So 6 is the stack distance before we want to access the F. And then now we mechanically have to take 6 minus 2, which is 4. And therefore push lock 4. Okay? So now, and you see when I execute, when I do this code generation, I'm very happy that I do not, at that point do not have to start reasoning, and make a picture, and where is this my stack pointer, and where is my thing. That is, leads to nowhere. One simply has to apply the algorithm, and that simply says subtract stack distance and relative address. Yeah. So therefore, push log 4, and that's already everything. In kind of the boring thing, you might also say the boring thing to do the code generation for the function application, just decorate this sequence with mark and apply. Okay? So, in essence, just for a summarization, this code here does not look so much differently from the corresponding code for C. In the corresponding code for C, this kind of thing was kind of placed here, and this here was a call. And this was just mark. That's the only difference. And this code C, code V, did not exist. Or it was all code R. Yeah? But otherwise, it's kind of a not so much different. Now here you see the full code, which I wanted to create, produce code for. Now for that you see this one, which we have already dealt with. This one we have already dealt with. So, and it is a LED, so we can do it. Yeah. So we can now compute code, generate code for this non-trivial piece of, for this small kind of benchmark program, and we see. So first we have to do the A equals 7, the let A equals 17. So here this is the L value for the 17, and that's on top of the stack, and that's it. Now we go for the F equals fun B arrow A plus B. So that is then here the functional value is produced, and here we jump across the code for the function when it is called, and we continue at this place. And in between, we see here this is the instruction sequence starting with test arg 1 and ending with return 1, which we have in the one example produced for fun B arrow A plus B. And then this latest, the last part is this one, which we have seen on the last slide for F applied to 42. Yeah, it starts with a mark, ends with an apply, and in between we have to provide the argument, which is this load constant 42, followed by make basic, and then the access to the F, which was the push log 4. And then the only thing which then is missing is this slide 2. Where does this slide 2 come from? Why slide 2 in the end? This is from the LED, yes, as you said. So the A and the F, they must be squeezed out of the, they go out of scope. They kind of, we only want to have the result, and that is on top, should be on top of the stack. Therefore, and the stack distance before the C is 3, and so two things have to be squeezed out of the stack, which means slide 2. Okay, so that was, now we see that function application, at least code generation for the function application was easy. But I cheated a little bit because I did not really say what the mark A is and what the apply is. So therefore we now have to look at what at this mark A and the apply. So for the mark A, we kind of have to agree how the organizational cells are organized, so in which order the three registers will be placed on top of the stack. Yeah, and here I just do it in this way, GP old the lowest, then the frame pointer, and then the PC. Yeah, and that by this organization, we immediately know what the mark A should be. It first has to push the current global pointer, then it has to push the current frame pointer, then it has to push the A. And then that's it. And then the current frame pointer is set to the same value as the stack pointer, and the frame pointer is set to this. I wonder whether this is true. Yes. And then the frame pointer is set to the stack pointer, and the stack pointer, which is also set to SP plus 3. Now, what I wondered, why I was a little, for a few seconds confused, is why can we change the frame pointer right away? Because we still have to evaluate the expressions evaluate the arguments and the E prime, which is the function. But we can change the frame pointer, no problem, because the locals which are necessary to access to evaluate the arguments and the function are addressed relative to the stack pointer anyway, so the frame pointer is not necessary for that. But the frame pointer is necessary will be necessary later for the E prime in order to find out whether how many arguments have been pushed on top of the stack. So therefore, we set the frame pointer already now, so we still use the local variables from the last, from the stack frame, from the old stack frame. So that is kind of perhaps interesting. The second thing is now for the apply thing, and now you see here that this apply thing sees a little bit. So the slide is quite full, and we might wonder what happens here. Now, what do we expect from the apply function to be done. So we expect that it kind of, so with the functional object is kind of a wraps around the code pointer and contains extra information. So the two, what kind of extra information does it contain? The arguments which are or have already been provided and the global pointer. And so these two informations must now be made available or be to the when we before jumping to the code pointer. Yeah. So how that means this global thing here, this global pointer, or sorry, I should kind of mark it differently. So here this global pointer, which was inside the functional object, must become the current global pointer. Yeah? The old global pointer has already been saved into the stack frame, but the new global pointer will be this one, and this must be made the current code global pointer. Yeah? So that is the easy exercise. The next thing is here, this argument pointer. So the argument pointer is to a vector, namely this one here. And this argument pointer contains those arguments which have already been provided, and they must be pushed on top of the stack. Yeah, because on top of the stack we expect the arguments for the function. And when we jump to the code, does not expect the arguments in some vector, but on top of the stack. So therefore, we have to push them. Yeah. So I think last time there was somebody asked, why don't we pass the parameters also in a vector? Yeah, so we could do that. Then you would have to do a different thing. Then we would have to take this argument pointer, which is provided by the functional object, and have to append somehow the arguments which have been passed in the current call. So that we then have a complete list, or a complete vector of arguments, which then can be used by the code of the function. Yeah? So, but here we do it differently. We put everything on the stack. So that means we now have to put this vector on top of the stack. And now the question is in which order? And here the idea is that what is left... So the idea is what is the leftmost thing, which is this one, is put on top of the stack first. And then the next one is put above, and so on. So why is this important that I kind of insist so much on the ordering? Because in the way how I kind of then later will put them onto the stack, it must kind of correspond into the way how I put the arguments inside this vector. Yeah? And so that means the rightmost thing, so that is what is sitting deepest, the rightmost argument which is already provided is on the left. Yeah. And if more inner arguments should be appended to the right. Okay? So that is the way. So that is this, and now you kind of look again at this picture, then it is hopefully no longer so confusing. These are the arguments. They must be put onto the stack. The global pointer must be put into the GP. And here the code pointer, this is the next PC. And that's it. And then we call. Yeah. So in that sense, it is not... And here, I hope, this kind of code, which I have written down there, exactly does this, what I have explained to you now. The only thing, there's a little bit more. It is does a little bit of code, a little bit of checking, in that it checks whether the pointer on top of the stack really points to a functional object, and if not, complains and stops evaluation. So if our functional program has been nicely produced by a compiler, and the compiler additionally has done some type checking before, this should never happen. But if you have an untyped language, or you have a compiler bug, then you might have no fun. Yeah. Okay. Is there a question to this instruction? Okay. Yeah. So this warning I have explained to you, so we will come back to it when we create, so far we have created functional objects, yes, but with empty argument vectors, so there was no problem. But later, at some point, we will also have to treat the case where we have to wrap, where there are not sufficiently many arguments around, and then we have to wrap them into the vector, and then we have to recall how, in which order, we have to put them into the argument vector. Okay, So that is kind of the mark and the apply. So function calls are done. Then the only thing, kind of the things which we are still uneasy about, is this testing the argument, this test argument instruction and the return instruction. So these were the first and last instructions in the code for a function. So therefore, the test k instruction is at runtime evaluated always after an apply. So first we do the apply and then we do the test arg. Only the apply is on the caller side and the test arg is in the callee side. So therefore, the callee knows how many arguments are required, namely this k. Yeah, so the caller does not know necessarily how many arguments a function needs. So apply does not know about how many arguments are required for the function to be called, but the function, when it is starting executing, it knows, because there is the k. Yeah, so therefore it knows. The k is the current number of arguments, and we have kind of put it into the code. Yeah? Okay. And now, since we know here we are in a function which requires two arguments, so we need to check, are there two arguments? If there are, or are there more than two arguments? If there are two arguments or more, we can kind of start executing. If there are less arguments, then we are doomed. Yeah? So therefore, we have two tasks. We have to check somehow. We have to find a way how to check that there are two arguments or more. How can we do it? And then, what do we do when there are less? So the first thing is, how can we check? And for this checking, I think I said it several times already, the frame pointer essentially is, the use of the frame pointer is to support this check. That is the only use of the frame pointer. And so why? Because when we enter the function, on top of the frame pointer points to the last organizational cell, and the stack pointer points to the first argument. So the difference between these two gives us the number of arguments. Yeah? So we just compute the stack distance, the stack pointer minus frame pointer. This is an easy difference of two registers, and this number tells us how many arguments are there. So therefore, this is nice to have such a simple test. Yeah? Okay. And this testing is now a complicated thing. So the first thing is, assume that there are at least, so this test is performed. And so k is the magic number which we want to have. If it is k or larger, then we do nothing. Then the test succeeds and we do nothing. So that is the easy case. And so in this, for this case, nothing is done, so this is fine. But now the question is, what happens if the test fails? And then several activities must be done, and we have, for convenience, I have split them into a sequence of, if you like, micro instructions. So you know, processors have sometimes micro instructions with which you can program your macro instructions, and here I kind of do identify three individual subtasks which I kind of assign to three individual sub instructions which we provide, but the test arg k will kind of execute them in sequence. And so now you may ask, why having this test arg k and not only these micro instructions? I could have done that also. We could have done that. But recall our general design principle for frequently occurring ever equal sequences of instructions. It is convenient to introduce a dedicated instruction which is more powerful, but which offers opportunities for the implementer to improve. Yeah? So if it's a longer sequence of activities which has to be done, then the implementer of the virtual machine can do an as ingenious implementation of this longer sequence as he is able to deliver, and this makes the code faster. So therefore it is better to have it in this way and not to have the test arc K as a big instruction instead of having these in the real implementation these three things. These are these three things. Make vector 0, wrap, and pop env are only here to explain to us so that we understand best what's going on. So what are they are meant to do? So the first is, or we might first meditate, what do we have to do? Well, if if there are not sufficiently many arguments available, then we cannot start evaluating the expression, but we have to return a functional object. A functional object now, which kind of incorporates the arguments which are too few. So we have to take the arguments which are there and put them into an argument vector and create a functional object. So that is our task. Yeah? And for that we do in three steps. First we collect all the arguments which are there. This is creating the argument vector. Then we wrap them into the functional object. This is there. And now we have the value of the function application. This is the functional object. We therefore now do no longer need the organizational cells, which we have, which are still sitting there for the purpose of evaluating the call. So therefore we can pop this environment. This is this pop env. Okay? So this is the third activity. And now let us see what we have, how these are implemented. So now we have to concentrate only in having a vector of arguments on top of the stack sitting. Now how to create the argument vector. And we said our idea was the rightmost, the outermost instruction is sitting where? Now I'm there's always something where I get confused. The one which is pushed first on top of the stack is sitting to the left. So that was the idea. So therefore, this one here must go into the very first position, and this is what is sitting on the top of the stack. This goes to the very right. Yeah. So, and that means if more arguments, inner arguments, so to speak, arrive, they are appended to the right. That was the idea. So this is the way, we must be careful about this, whether it is in this way or in the other way around, because this corresponds, recall, 5 minutes ago when we had the apply, we unpacked, we pushed this vector on top of the stack, and now this we put the stack and push it and make it into a vector. So these kind of things must correspond. So that is the simple thing of the make vector. And this we had a make vector instruction so far, which this it was a make vector, and we could write there make vector 5, yeah. And this was for when we constructed the globals. There this make vector 5 had an explicit number, how many elements to be put into the vector. Now here in this case, this make vector 0 has no arguments. Why? Because it's dynamic. We do not statically know how many arguments will be put into the vector, but this number will be determined at runtime by taking the difference of stack pointer and frame pointer. Therefore, this is kind of a version of this make vector instruction where the number of arguments is dynamic. Yeah, so therefore, this makes vector zero. So this does not mean that it's a zero vector, but it's maybe I should have named it differently. But yeah, so but that's yeah. So this is the idea here. Okay, so that was not so difficult. Let us go back. This was this making the argument, wrapping the arguments into a vector. This we succeeded with. The next thing is wrapping. So we have now to wrap, create a new functional object, taking this argument vector into account. Now the question is, where do we get the global vector for it, and where do we get the code pointer for it? Where do we get the code pointer for it? So which is the code? Which is the code? You see here wrap. There is no number. It does not. I do not provide to this wrapping this A thing or so. What we had for the mark. So what kind of code? Where do I get the? Where the hell do I get the address of the functional object which I'm currently creating? Wow, yes. It's the same as this test arg k. It's the same address. How can we get it? So when we are executing this, the PC has already incremented by 1. So we have to subtract by 1. Yeah. So that is the wrapping. And the global pointer, where do we get it from? Well, that's the current global pointer. Yeah. So and that is exactly what the wrap does. Did I do it here? Ah, yeah. Yeah. You see here, the PC currently is 42, but here we wrap 41. And the current global pointer, this is the thing which we put in here, and the argument pointer is this one which sits on top of the stack. So that's it. So now when we think about it, it's a very simple instruction. Yeah, nothing difficult to do, but we must be careful where do we get the pieces which we want to, which we need, which we must have at hand in order to construct this functional object. Okay, so we did that. Now let us see what else do we have to do. Now comes this popenv. So what does that mean? So that means we have to remove the organizational cells. Is this everything which we have to do? Then this would be slide 3. Genau. So we have to restore the frame pointer, the global pointer, and the frame pointer, the global pointer, and the PC. So that is the popenv. So it pops the environment and has to do the sliding thing. So that is this popenv does. So it has to put the here is the current frame. The current frame pointer has to be the PC which has been stored. The frame pointer that one has to be put here into the FP, and this one is the global pointer which is put into the global pointer. So these three registers which have been saved as organizational cells must be restored, and then the thing, whatever is on top of the stack, must be put here on frame pointer minus 3. Frame pointer minus 2. Yeah, so that's kind of the activity which is done here. So here I'm a little bit more liberal in this instruction as it is in this current application, because in the current situation this reference was exactly on top of the three organizational cells, but this may not necessarily be the case. Maybe there's some garbage in between and we simply kind of take the topmost memory cell and place it at the bottommost organizational cell. That's the only thing what we have to do. Yeah? Okay. Is there a question? And now that is the magically we have never we have implemented this test RK. Also, we have just by implementing the three key instructions, sub-instructions there, and you see here each of them is a kind of a philosophical entity of its own, popping the environment, wrapping a functional object, wrapping the arguments, and so each of these tasks could be easily attacked once we have identified that these are the subtasks. Okay, so then that was here in the if you think of it in sequence, if this is the situation, then we would kind of and we then we executing the three things in sequence would then kind of first produce this this vector for the available arguments, then it would wrap the arguments these into this functional object, and then it would pop the argument, pop the environment, and restore the old global pointer, frame pointer, and PC, and return the functional object as the value. Okay, so by that, now you thinking of that in sequence, we now really see that this functional application, although it was undersupplied, not enough, still returns a value, namely a functional object which kind of comprises all the arguments which are not sufficient, but there and recorded in the functional object. Okay, so that makes that kind of increases our confidence that maybe this returning also will be, we can handle that as well. So the first thing is now, therefore, we have to switch our focus from the call to the return. So before the return, we have executed this code V thing. The code V thing has kind of returned on top of the stack the value of the of the function body. Yeah. Now, what shall we do with it? So, now we have to clearly somehow the stack frame, if it is no longer needed, we can give it up. Now, the question is it no longer needed? So, the stack frame is no longer needed if we consumed all arguments. So, if there was no oversupply. If we have a function which consumes one argument, but it is supplied with two arguments, then having executed the function, there's still one argument left. And kind of the idea is that the function which we have currently executed has returns a value, yes, but one which hopefully consumes the remaining arguments. Yeah? So this is possible, that a function produces a function as a value, which can consume further arguments. Yeah? So therefore, the good case is when there are no further arguments, then we can kind of pop the environment, and that would be exactly this instruction popenv, which we have already used, this micro instruction, which we could use once all no parameters are remaining. If there are more parameters around, then we have to remove those parameters which we have consumed and proceed with the remaining parameters. Yeah? And that is this sequence. Yeah? So now let us once again look in the details of this instruction. So this return K instruction, what should it do? So it tests what can it test? So as before, we would like to use the difference between stack pointer and frame pointer to decide whether all parameters are consumed. Now the difference between why do I test the difference between stack pointer and frame pointer for k plus 1 and not for k? Yes, there's a return value. I cannot, so there is not only parameters sitting on top of the stack, there's also the return value, and therefore I must check for k plus 1. Yeah? And then if this is the case, then everything is fine, that all parameters are consumed because k parameters are those which I have needed, and then I can really just do this pop env and I'm happy. Yeah, so this is the good case. Now the bad case is, okay, so I have the return value on top of the stack. This is, and now I squeeze out the k parameters which I have consumed by sliding k steps down. Now what is then the situation? Then I have a lot of parameters sitting on the stack, and on top of it I have a functional object. And below I have organizational cells. The organizational cells down there say how to continue if I'm done with this function application. So that's fine. So I reuse this stack frame. So that is kind of the idea. Here, I want to reuse the stack frame, so I do not have to create it again. I just call the apply. And by that, I reuse the old stack frame, and then the apply will, and I hope that my consumption of some of the parameters has produced a functional object on top of the stack, which I now can evaluate. Yeah, and that is the task of this apply. So here it is an interesting thing. This apply instruction here is located, is used here as a micro instruction. So it is kind of inside this return k. But it was also a standalone instruction which you used. Also, the slide k was also a standalone instruction which you used at some other place. Okay, so now let us see. So, and now we are happy about this micro instruction thing, because otherwise I would have to show you. Popenv, we have already seen. No, where is it? Yeah, because now we can reuse some of these micro instructions and some of the instruction which we have to create the complicated effect of the return k. So returning this thing is here a case. The first case is when the parameters are exactly k. So that means that the test for k plus 1 will succeed. In this case, we only have to do the popping the environment. And you see here in this particular situation, now suddenly we are happy that we made our pop environment a little bit more general and allow it also to be applied in a situation where there's something in between the organizational cells and our current return value. Yeah, because here is some garbage, namely the k arguments which we no longer need. Yeah, and so we give up our stack frame, and that is restore the old values which we had stored in the organizational cells and kind of put that value, return that as a value. So that is the easy thing, and now the complicated thing, the oversupply thing. So here we have hopefully on top of the stack, so the function call has returned hopefully a functional object. Now we squeeze out k elements. This is, we do the slide k, so this is the first step. This one here moves down, and now we do the apply. And then, okay, apply was also not so simple. It has to unpack this functional object, push the arguments on top of the stack again, and continue evaluation. With evaluation that I will not show you in further slides, but that's, now we are happy that we have this apply shown on another slide, because it consists in itself in several sub-steps. Okay, so that was this test arc k and return k. Is there a question for that? Okay, so then now we make rapid progress. We recursive definitions. So this is the LETREC instruction. So far we could deal with functions, we could deal with local definitions, we had the LET. But the LET was so far restricted, as we had, if we stated something like let f equal fun x plus 1. Yes, that we could do, but we could not kind of write a recursive definition like, for example, factorial function or something like that, because that would mean that this function itself would have to be called recursively. And this we cannot, so far we have no possibility. The let was not able to do that, because if an f occurred there, then this f refers to an f which was defined outside. It's not the current f. It's an earlier defined f. Yeah, that is the meaning of this let thing. So therefore, if you want to write something as simple as the factorial function or greatest common divisor or any meaningful function, then we need recursive definitions. Now, what is the problem with the recursive definition? The problem with the recursive, so here is the general format again. So here I just, for convenience, wrote it in that way, that we have a recursive definition of k variables at a time. Now, what is the specific thing here? The specific thing is that this E1 may refer to a variable, for example, this yn, which is introduced only later. So that is, but recall, if you do this E1, and if it's a function, then we have to wrap the globals for the E1 into a global vector. But how can we wrap something into a global vector, which will be created later? So this is kind of not possible, or we have to find a way how to do it. So the way how we do it is that we have to allocate all the variables in this recursive definition simultaneously. So we have first to allocate the y1 to yn, initialized with dummies, so that they are available as objects, that we can refer to them when wrapping references to them into globals, into global vectors. And then later, we will kind of define the values of these dummies. So that is kind of the problem. That is the essence, how we get the recursive definition. How we can define something which is not yet defined. Something, or we can use something which is not yet defined. So that is kind of the problem which we have. Yeah? Okay. So that means here we allocate these y1 to yn as local variables, but we allocate the space for it. It's not so only on the stack, but we kind of create dummy objects in the heap. Then we kind of can start to evaluate the E1 to En. And the evaluating E1 to En will possibly make use of the Y1 to Yn. And then we will kind of bind the values of the Ye to these values. And then now for call by need, it's the same thing as before, only that we do not compute the values for E1 to En, but only the closures. And overwrite, binding the Y1 to these closures means overwriting the dummy heap objects by the closure heap objects. So that means also that here's a kind of, in the call by need things, everything is clear. In the call by value thing, we have kind of a problem. And that is, for example, if we write, for example, something like let rec x equals x plus 1. Yeah, how can we do it? Because here the x is not yet there, and then we have to evaluate x plus 1. And that will kind of that will not work. So in that case, we cannot override the. So then you may wonder how can it work at all? The point is, when I have something like let rec f equals fun x f of x, for example, then this would work. Why? Because the functional object can be, as a value, can be created, and this value can be used to override the dummy object. So therefore, in this case, everything is fine. So that is, so afterwards at runtime it will be non-terminating, but at least the code generation will work. Yeah? Well, this one, such a thing is not possible, or it's not meaningful, at least, in call-by-value programming languages. There you cannot compute non-functional recursive values. While in lazy languages you can compute also with non-functional recursive values. So that is possible there, but it is not possible in a call-by-value language. It's not meaningful. I would not like to write x equals x plus 1. Yeah? So that is, in this sense, this recursive recursion is nice, but it works properly well only for functional values in call-by-value languages. I think also in C nobody would kind of like, so there's something, you could not even dream of writing something like x equals x plus 1. Okay, so now, how can we, we have not yet in detail figured out how the individual tasks will be implemented, but still we can already create code for it. And we're dreaming up such code generation schemes, kind of could be thought of as a specification of the implementation, if you like. So we introduce simply for those subtasks which we have identified an instruction, and then leave it later with the imagination of the implementer of the virtual machine to dream up the implementation of these instructions. Yeah? So let us see. So here the expression E is of this form let rec y1 and so on until yn in E0. I think that was the instruction. Yes. That was the expression. Now what will we generate, how will the code look like? So we have to allocate objects, dummy objects, for y1 to yn. So we don't know how to allocate dummy objects, so therefore we create a new instruction for it. So this is for the allocation. Alloc n. Then comes the, we are in a call by need environment. Then comes the code which we have to generate for the first expression in a certain variable environment, which we will kind of discuss later how it looks like. The important thing is, now the stack distance here has increased by n. Why? Because we have allocated n things, n dummy objects in the heap, but we have also pushed n reference, n local variables, namely the y1 to yn, for the y1 to yn, to these dummy objects. Yeah, so therefore stack distance has increased by n. And now, so we have created now this code C, E1, will create a closure for the E1 on top of the stack. So, if you like, on top of the n new variables. Now, what has to be done now? Then, well, this, we said, is kind of used, this value, to update the value of the variable y1. So therefore, this is done by means of this updating, by this rewrite n. This rewrites the first of these new local variables, and we proceed like that until we have arrived at the nth. This is the right-hand side for the yn. Again, we construct the closure for it, and the stack distance there is still n. Why? It has not increased because the values which we have computed in between we have kind of used to update the locals, so they have been gone. So now we still have one extra reference on top of the locals, on top of the y's. Now why is it here only then a rewrite 1? Because the last local, well, this is on top of the stack, this is kind of one step below the current value which we have created, therefore a rewrite 1. And once we have done all these updates, then the y1 to yn are in the right, have been kind of realized, then we can start. Then we have prepared the ground for evaluating the main expression, which is the E0. And the value which the E0 computes, this is the value of the whole expression, which we then have to, which we can then make available to the world by means of this slide n, which throws away again the locals y1 to yn, which are no longer needed after having evaluated the E0. So that is the overall idea, but I will come back to this. I will show you, I will start tomorrow again with this scheme, because we still have not yet decided about this row prime and what we do in case of call by value and such things. Thank you again for your attention, and we see us tomorrow.